Rural Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris.
Maryland Democratic Congressman Chris Van Hollen, a member of the Super Committee, looking for ways to cut federal spending.
If we're not able to reach an agreement, that would, of course, not send a very good signal to the markets and the economy. And this sort of Damocles, which will come down if we're unable to reach an agreement that will sort of indiscriminately cut important investments in both defense and non-defense.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
What will happen to your agency's 2012 budget? Follow all of the twists and turns of the budget process at federalnewsradio.com. Search term budget.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, I have Phelan Weyrich, who has a PhD. He is a senior advisor to the Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Justice Programs at the U.S. Department of Justice. Good morning, Phelan. How are you today?
Very good. Thanks.
Boy, big, long title, all kinds of justice in there. Well, Phelan is not an attorney. Thank goodness he's not an attorney. But he has managed a very interesting program here that I think many listeners will benefit from, just maybe picking his brain and trying to find out how he got this program to actually get up and running and get released here in June of 2011. And the program we're going to focus in on today is something called crimesolutions.gov. And what I want to do today is take a look at this crimesolutions.gov and put Phelan in the perspective of a typical listener, maybe at an interior or maybe over at agriculture, trying to put together a similar program. And maybe he can tell us about where the landmines are and where the problems are and what to avoid, what not to avoid, and why he made some very key decisions in putting this successful program together. And that's the whole objective here. We're not going to talk about bits and bytes or about legal decisions. We're going to talk about managing projects, I think, from a federal IT professional. But first of all, Phelan, tell us a little bit about your background. I guess you circled up. You were born and raised in this town, kind of circled out and came back in, huh?
That's right. I grew up in Montgomery County, Maryland, in Bethesda and Rockville area, and lived there until I was about 20 years old. Went off to college in North Carolina, lived in Portland, Oregon for a year. Then moved down to Los Angeles, where I did my graduate work. And while I was doing graduate work in social psychology and with a bit of emphasis on program evaluation, I found myself in a job at a police department in their Office of Research and Planning. And it was never really my initial intention, but found myself enjoying that work a lot and took an opportunity in 1998 to come back to Washington and start working in the Office of Justice Programs, at that time in the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention.
You know, in doing some preparation for this interview, I read an article about a fellow named Van Hitch, who 10 years ago, he started at the DOJ, and I think he was CIO, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they presented the question to him. They said, well, geez, what are you proud of? What are you most proud of in the last 10 years of accomplishing at the Department of Justice? And one of the aspects was information sharing. And I think that's one of the components of this project called crimesolutions.gov. But let me have you define crimesolutions.gov from maybe 40,000 feet and then drill down a little bit, Phelan.
Sure. It's a website that's intended for justice practitioners and policymakers who are working in the fields of criminal justice, juvenile justice, and victim services, primarily at the state, local, or tribal levels in this country. And the purpose of the website is to provide them with access to information about what social science says about how effective various justice programs are in achieving their goals.
So what this does, it takes a look at 150 programs, and it gets professionals and subject matter experts to evaluate them, and then they're rated. Is that correct?
That's correct. It gives a rating of either effective, promising, or no effects to these programs, depending on the rigor and the quality of the evaluations that were done initially on these programs and, of course, the outcomes.
You know, this has got to have so many applications all throughout the federal government. I mean, we can go up the street to NIH. There's got to be 100 applications there for evaluating efficacy of certain specific types of programs. And so this is a real good example of how that's done. And if you go to the website, crimesolutions.gov, it's very visual, isn't it? It's like a stoplight, isn't it?
It is. We use, you know, we worked very hard thinking and selecting the icons that we would use to indicate the effectiveness ratings. The idea is to give what some have called blink recognition. You could just so quickly look and see, okay, this program is rated as effective. This one is, you know, promising. And we use, you know, essentially the green light, yellow light, red light colors that folks are used to seeing to reflect those ratings.
You know, when I close my eyes now and I think about the site, I can see the red, green, and yellow stoplight. But then there's a pie chart in the lower right-hand side as well. So it takes it topically and then categorically. And it's just simple visual colors that I'm sitting back here going, well, I get it. you can almost without reading, you know.
We really worked hard on usability. There were a few touchstones for us throughout the whole development process. One was really ease of use, because we recognize that we're serving not just the most sophisticated jurisdictions in the country that have, you know, a great deal of resources, but also all those small jurisdictions out there. And we need folks to be able to access this information. One of the big challenges is that this body of information, social science, evaluation literature, is very inaccessible to people. So we wanted to make it easily recognizable.
So if someone is sitting in Cuyahoga County, Ohio, mm-hmm. and their budget's being pulled back, and someone goes up to, let's say, Joe Smith and says, well, Joe, your budget's being cut back from 8 programs to 5 programs. Which 3 are you going to cut? So he can do them alphabetically. He can do it by the year they were started. Or he can attempt to do something that's data-driven and maybe evidence-based. I mean, let's go crazy and use some evidence, huh?
Right. You mentioned that there's really what I would call an evidence-based movement going on across multiple disciplines and fields right now. So this is our approach to working that injustice. And for people who are in those difficult decisions of trying to pare back, or people who are in the position of trying to reassess the work they're doing, there's a variety of ways that they can use this information to help them get a better understanding of where they should be putting their priorities, either in terms of a new program they might want to put in place, or, as you indicated, sometimes you've got to pare back.
So I'm sitting in my office in Cuyahoga County, Ohio, and I'm trying to evaluate ABC program. So I go to crimesolutions.gov, and I pull up the program, and voila, it gets all thumbs up or green lights. And so what that meant is that the program was selected, it was evaluated, and there was a decision based on its capability within the last year. Is that right, or what's the whole time frame on?
Well, actually, sometimes these evaluations can be done years and years ago. And one of the real cautions about this information is that we have to be clear that just because a program was put into place and it worked somewhere doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be working in your locality. There's a lot of work that goes into implementing these programs correctly and getting the most out of the outcomes. Also, a lot of localities find that it's necessary for them to adapt or adjust these programs in some ways. So one of the messages we continue to send on this is that this is not a complete body of knowledge that is static and that we can just continue to look back on. We have to continue developing this body of knowledge. And so all those local efforts, we certainly encourage ongoing evaluation, because the Cleveland or the Cuyahoga County example that you provide, they may be doing it slightly differently. And to the extent possible, we want them to be working to test that and evaluate that so that we can continue to build our body of knowledge.
So let's go south. Let's go to Broward County. And so we have Joe Smith working in Broward County, and he's got to pull back a program, and he goes to crimesolutions.gov, and he sees a red. Now, that's just information that he can use to make a decision. It's not binding. It's just another part of a package they might use to evaluate a program. Is that right?
Absolutely. This is intended to inform decision-making. It doesn't replace decision-making. There's any number of issues that you're going to consider at a local level in terms of whether you want to put a program into place or pull a program off. It's a judgment call that's based on local knowledge. It's based on local experience. It's based on conditions on the ground. But what we want to be able to provide for folks is that national picture. What does the social science say? Because frankly, that has been inaccessible to people for many years because so much of this research is hidden away in literally hundreds of different journals or sources that in some cases are completely inaccessible unless you are in a university library.
It goes back to the start of the program. We talked about information sharing, and that's what this program is doing, is it's sharing information so people who are sitting in office far from the federal government can take advantage of this information to be able to judge whether to keep a program or pare it back or expand it. Tell me about there's a scoring tool that's used, or exactly how would a program be evaluated?
Right. So every program that we look at is one that's already been subject to some kind of program evaluation. And there's different methods, and we set certain criteria in terms of the rigor and the quality of those program evaluations. What we then do is we have a system of looking at the evaluations themselves and the outcomes of those evaluations and measurements so that we can really tell whether that's quality enough information to put up on the site.
I have a measure myself, a measure is time, and I have to take a break here for a commercial, Phelan. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Phelan Weyrich, PhD. He's a senior advisor to the Assistant Attorney General the Office of Justice Programs at the DOJ.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
I need some answers. September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. Is this the year you're going to do it? Pack your bags for that trip of a lifetime?
The whole travel industry has been just exploding.
Dr. Stephen Krotzer is a travel medicine specialist at Mayo Clinic. If you're planning a trip overseas, maybe even to a remote or developing area, he says there's another trip you should take first, to your doctor's office and maybe a travel medicine specialist. You need to make sure you're fit enough to travel, and then there are the vaccinations.
The most important vaccines of all are just the routine ones.
Like diphtheria, tetanus, and the flu shot. Depending on where you're headed, insect-borne diseases like dengue fever, yellow fever, and malaria may need to be discussed. Dr. Krotzer also suggests medical evacuation insurance. It's relatively cheap, but can save you thousands if you need to be brought home because of injury or illness. For more information, talk to your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Vivian Williams.
Navy ships are crowded with large metal antennas that can't be hidden or protected when not in use. Engineers are now exploring a unique solution. Since salt water conducts electricity, Navy electrical engineer Daniel Tam thought,
maybe I can utilize the seawater as my antenna element.
After a trip to Home Depot, Tam connected a device called a current probe to a radio and pumped a vertical stream of water through it.
On the ships, the fire hose easily can generate a stream at least 100 feet in the air.
It worked. Height determines frequency and
I can transfer more information using a thicker water stream.
Just turn the water off and the antennas disappear when not in use. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
To the Marines who watch over the skies, it says the enemy can't see you. To the Marines who carry out their mission on the ground, it says I have your back. To adversaries, it says don't even think about it. It is the F-35B, the fifth generation multi-role fighter jet that combines short takeoff and vertical landing capability with supersonic speed and radar evading stealth. the F-35B, the multi-role fighter that's equipped to go wherever Marines must go. Wherever the mission takes them, our Marines know it will be there. It's the F-35B, a fighter jet that can take off and land virtually anywhere, from the most remote, austere airfields and roads to modern ships. That means it can be based close to frontline combat, shrinking the distance between base and target. For the Marines and for our nation, that's a game-changing advantage. The F-35B, the multi-role fighter that's equipped to go wherever Marines must go.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
The job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio here, we have Phelan Weyrich. He has a Ph.D., and he is a senior advisor to the Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Justice Programs at the DOJ. Not talking about lawyer talk and lawsuits and everything else. We're talking about how do you put together a government website that works, and how do you do it effectively, and what kind of obstacles do you have to overcome? And Phelan's done that very, very effectively with a site called crimesolutions.gov. A couple S's in there, crimesolutions.gov. Well, Phelan, let's maybe go back in time here, a year and a half or something. I would imagine President Obama got this silly idea in his head to improve the justice system in the United States, and he must have gone to DOJ and said, we have to do this, and then someone came to you and pointed the finger at you and said, you're the man, or what exactly, how did this all transpire?
I think it really began with President Obama's inauguration speech, where he made a commitment to the integrity of science and how we would be evaluating science in the federal government. And that just translated down through each agency in its own way. And in justice, what that meant is that Attorney General Eric Holder and my boss, Lori Robinson, the Assistant Attorney General for Office of Justice Programs, really came in with a commitment to science. And this was one of the key ways they wanted to implement that, was to, in fact, Lori Robinson had the same position under the Clinton administration. And so she came back with a strong desire to do a project exactly like this one, and that is a clearinghouse, as she put it, for what works and what's promising in criminal and juvenile justice and victim services.
So it started off as the Model Programs Guide. Is that was the origin?
Well, what happened is one of our components, our Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention, they put together something called the Model Programs Guide. Actually, in 1999 is when they opened this, and it was a similar effort, but it was only focused on juvenile programs. It started when the body of research and evaluation was a little younger, a little less developed. So what we did when we started building crimesolutions.gov was we looked at all the lessons that had been learned through that Model Programs Guide experience. And it really helped us to get this project off the ground on the right foot, because we were able to apply some lessons learned.
So when you think of science, you think of evidence, and that's part of your job, too, is evidence integration into this program. Is that kind of parallel with what you're doing here?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the crimesolutions.gov is just one project under our larger initiative we call the Evidence Integration Initiative. We're really looking at a broad array of activities that we can take on that will help us do a better job of generating evidence for the field, integrating and synthesizing that knowledge, and then translating it back into practice.
So, you know, trying to improve the quality of the evidence there, and maybe part and parcel of that would be the policymakers to be able to take advantage of some of that information that you provide.
Absolutely. We've found time and again that we can do great research. We can prepare reports on this, but it's quite difficult to get it into the format and get it into the minds and the thought process and the decision-making process of policymakers and practitioners. And so that whole effort we need to focus on, and that's a big part of what we're trying to do under Crime Solutions.
You know, every agency that's listening has got programs that need to be evaluated, and I think this is so interesting of a way to do this. You picked 150. Why the number 150, and how'd you select those 150?
Well, we in fact set a target. We had to set a target that was meaningful for launch, and we knew that we weren't going to be able to cover the entire universe.
It's exactly what a software developer would say. We can't do everything. Tell me what we can do.
Exactly
what people are thinking.
So we had to come up with a meaningful number. In fact, our target was 125, but we were able to leverage some other investments and build it out to 150 by the time we launched.
And so it's searchable, is that right?
Yeah, searchable for us is one of the touchstones in terms of usability. We did some early usability testing on one of our earliest version of this website, and frankly, our testers didn't know what the heck we were trying to accomplish and what we were trying to convey, and we recognized that as a big problem, and so we completely redesigned our homepage and built it in such a way that you can, you know, browse into your subject. If you're just interested in corrections, you want to look at programs there, you can sort of browse in, or you can do the kind of search, the keyword search that people are so used to doing on sites like Google, where you just enter what you're interested in and click the search button. You can also do more advanced searches where you can select criteria, or on the front page, we have a box that just says, what do you want to do? And then lists a few options. So we try to make it just as simple as possible for people.
You know, that testing, I think, is one of the number one lessons to be learned for all federal IT professionals. We had the folks in from vaccines.gov. They tested that site out. What they found was that many of the people who were wanting information on vaccines were using handheld devices. And so they changed and they adopted it to be easy for handheld devices to use. And you did the exact same thing well, let's put this together. And what we think this would be important, test it in front of some people. Maybe we're wrong. And I think this is part of being flexible. Part of the 25-point plan that Vivek came up with is have more flexible software development where it's done in chunks and then changed rather than starting once and 3 years later finishing and making the mistakes all over again, huh?
It was so important for us in the early stages to do that work. We got terrific feedback, and I sat in on some of those testing sessions, and here were things that I thought were so apparent and so, you know, so meaningful and helpful, didn't help at all for the users. And so it's just we found that feedback to be very valuable. We don't consider that process finished. We have a lot more testing to do, and we'll continue to get feedback from users.
You know, I'll be the first one to admit that I'm an egomaniac and I think I know everything. And a lot of people in that position, they think that, and all of a sudden they test it and they're completely wrong. And they got to go, okay, and go back and try. The road to hell, what's the best laid plans, the road to hell or something? I mean, you think everything makes perfect sense to me. Let's have, 15 different classifications. Well, that's too many, John. We'll have two. No, that's not enough. So maybe three. Well, there's three classifications here. It seems to work better rather than 15.
Yeah, and this is exactly the bridge we're trying to build between, frankly, academics, social scientists, and practitioners in the justice field. There's probably 10 dozen ways in which those different disciplines think completely differently. Their motivation system, their incentive systems are completely different. So the information that the academics are producing and the researchers are producing that is really valuable to those practitioners is often conveyed in such a way that it just doesn't translate. So we tried to be very clear in our efforts to focus on the practitioners, the end users. It would be our job to build that bridge. So, ironically, we get questions and criticism sometimes from the researchers themselves who think maybe we haven't provided the full spectrum of information that's out there. And our response is, you know, maybe the full spectrum is not actually what's most helpful to folks.
You know, it's interesting that even terminology, I think we brought this up, maybe if you're in an academic world, they may use certain terms to indicate something, but out in the streets, they may use different terms. And so the ratings you used were interesting. They were effective, promising, and no effect. Kind of interesting. I'm sure that was a much debated meeting that day. They come up with those terms. But the chairs were throwing and everything's going back and forth. I mean, they're very interesting terms to be used there, aren't they?
The one that was trickiest was no effects.
Oh, I can imagine, because you could put loser. You could put a lot of words there, couldn't you?
Right. There were many options considered that were knocked off the list, but even the inclusion of such a category is a bit controversial. Many websites like this will have the effective and promising categories. Those are pretty much no-brainers. But to even put that information up about the things that weren't achieving their goals, we really wondered whether we needed to do that and whether that was helpful and whether it would cause too much trouble. But what we heard as we talked about this with our end users was, again and again, they were saying, please put that information
in. As you tested it, isn't it? Yeah. You asked the end users what they wanted and came back and changed and came back and changed. An iterative process.
Hmm. Please put it in, because we get pressure from our legislators or our executives to fund these programs that we know don't work.
We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the release of the website here. And we're talking about crimesolutions.gov and the reaction and maybe some of the changes that took place after the release. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Phelan Weyrich, PhD. He's a senior advisor to the Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Justice Programs at the DOJ.
With vacation time just around the corner, Ackerman Security can help keep families like yours safe and secure. For just $18.95 a month, trust in the protection of Ackerman's nationally certified monitoring center and switch your existing system at no cost and that great $18.95 rate. And Ackerman is the only company with a guaranteed response time. Federal government employees get an added bonus. 4 months of monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
See more, do more, get more. HP notebook PCs powered by Vision Pro technology from AMD simply deliver more. Graphics made incredible, multitasking made easy, high performance made possible. Designed with HP mobile innovations that let productivity happen anywhere, anytime. Notebooks built to handle big demands. Price so your budget can handle it. Give your agency the power of HP and AMD. To find out how, go to hp.com/go/perform.
HalfPriceDC.com is your gateway to the best daily deals in the area, all at half price. Don't miss out on a great deal to Westfields Golf Club, a Fred Couples design course in Clifton, Virginia. Get a round of golf, golf cart, and range balls, normally $100, yours for only $50 at Half Price DC. Westfields Golf Club. Public golf kept private. It only feels like a private club. Want in on this deal? Go to halfpricedc.com and click Sign Me Up. Halfpricedc.com.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Chuck Chapdelaine is the deputy CIO of the Joint Task Force, National Capital Region Medical. He says the new joint network will change how data is used by doctors and improve care to servicemen and women.
With the data integration that we have, now we can have that information flow seamlessly from the point of capture, if a facility is hooked to the JMed, and be instantly available at the referring facility. So that is a huge benefit to make sure that the right data gets to the right provider on the right patient at the right time.
Whether your organization calls it cloud, utility computing, managed services, or capacity services, at the core is the rapid provisioning of information technology infrastructure. At Vion Corporation, they pioneered capacity services 10 years ago. Vion was awarded the first and currently holds the largest federal government capacity services contract. They provide government IT owners an agile financial vehicle for meeting mission-critical IT needs. Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been delivering IT solutions to the government for over 31 years. Visit Vion.com to learn more.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Here's your chance to get out for some fun. Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News.
Wisp is Maryland's ski resort, but they also have great golf packages at this time of year. It's a little bit cooler, and you can actually play on two courses on the same mountain up there. The package starts at $133, includes two nights, accommodations, breakfast, and the golf. Wisp is also offering a package for the Art and Wine Festival up in Garrett County on September 9th and 10th. That package is for two and starts at $329.
Anything a little faster paced?
Well, sure, and this is an exclusive for Recreation News readers. We can get you onto the track at Dover International Speedway. Monster Racing has an offer for either a ride-along or a drive-yourself package right on the actual track in a real race car. With the offer on page 19 of the August Recreation News, you can buy a second package at half off. Remember, this is an exclusive for Recreation News readers, so you need to check out page 19 of Recreation News.
Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News. I'm Ruben Gomez.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Phelan Weyrich. He's a PhD, and he is a senior advisor to the Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Justice Programs at the DOJ. We're talking about a website called crimesolutions.gov. How did it get started? What were the problems? How you overcame those problems? What about the site design, iterative development? We mentioned that in the last block. This site was released in June of 2011. And tell me what happened the first week. Did you phone ring off the hook complaining, or did you bury your head in the sand somewhere? What happened the first week when it was released?
No, we were very excited, of course, at the release. And in this particular case, the release was marked by the Attorney General and the Assistant Attorney General, Lori Robinson, speaking at one of our conferences, a conference for our National Institute of Justice, and officially launching and announcing the site. That for us was very exciting. Of course, we had, you know, tested. We knew the site was functional and we knew it was doing what we wanted it to do, but we were very concerned with how it would be received. And there were, of course, key individuals out there in the field who have strong interest in this and long history with it. And we were very keen to know how they would react to it. The launch went very well. We received positive feedback from all sides and a lot of positive feedback. I really give our IT development people a lot of credit because there was a lot of positive feedback about the look, the feel, the usability, the ease of access, and that's so important in this work.
People go to Amazon.com, it's easy. And so they want to go to crimesolutions.gov, and they want it to be easy. That's what they want. That's what humans expect. And now, increasingly, they want to be able to walk down the street and go to website information in an easy fashion and switch around.
And one of the ways that we did that, I think one of the decisions that we made that I'm very pleased with is that we are not trying to be all things on this website. We do one thing, we're trying to do one thing well, and that is to be a source and a resource for this particular kind of information from social science. So a lot of websites, in my opinion, try to do sort of everything under the sun for whatever their area of interest is, to be a one-stop shop for just, you know, half a dozen different things. We're really pretty focused, and I think that helps us at this point.
Kind of like pick a sport and get good at it, not mm-hmm. try to do every single sport, including curling and basketball and baseball. Just pick right. one, get good at it. So I guess a lesson learned is have a real focus on what the end product's going to look like, and then have an iterative process where you test the site in front of different human beings from you and be humble enough to accept it and change, and then another iteration change. After two or three iterations, it's probably going to be close. Hmm?
That's right. And what we've seen from you know other similar types of projects is that you keep that approach going for some number of years, and it continues to improve. But you get to a certain point where Then as folks come to you and they raise concerns or criticisms, you've probably already considered them, heard them. And while they may disagree with whatever judgment call you came up with, it's usually you're in a position to say, well, we considered that. Here's the call we made on it.
And here's the FAQ on it. It's already been answered a year ago.
Exactly.
So when you got settled with this program, you decided to develop all the work in-house. Did you send it out? Or what was your process from the initial part?
Right. So we've got to go back in time to 2009 when Lori Robinson came on board. She brought me – I was already working at the Office of Justice Programs, and she brought me as a PhD social scientist into her office to work with her on tasks like this. And one of the first things she assigned me to do was to think about how we might develop this type of product. It took us about a year to really think and do the conceptual work and secure the budget for this project. And then we, from the time that we put out a request for proposals for a contractor, and from that time to launch, it was about 1 year's time.
That's not bad.
It's not bad. And we actually used two contractors because we used one contractor that we already had on board to do the IT development, the website development. So they just focused on our usability, our presentation, our database, et cetera. The other contractor dealt with all of the social science review and really sorting out the quality of the research and writing up the reviews of the programs.
We've had folks in from the CDC, people from NIH, and one commonality there is sensitive information. And, you know, electronic health records have to be carefully handled. And I imagine that in the world of justice, there's some records there that have to be carefully handled as well. What kind of lessons did you learn in handling secure records that you can maybe share with our audience about, for example, crime prevention or crime statistics? I mean, some of these, this information has to be handled very carefully, I would expect.
Yeah, sure. And frankly, a lot of that gets handled at the level of the individual evaluation study. There are human subjects regulations about how you handle that kind of sensitive information at that level. So we didn't have to deal with that so much because it had been dealt with in each one of the studies that was published. But what we did have to think about in developing the website was any personally identifiable information that might come in and how we might make sure to manage anything like that. One of the things, an example, is that we mentioned 150 or so programs, and each one of these programs provides a description of the program, a description of the evaluation, the outcomes, references, you know, that you can find more information on it. But we also wanted to provide information about a point of contact or maybe multiple points of contact that if you're interested in program ABC, then you may want to follow up with a live human being and talk to them about their experience implementing it, or if it's the evaluator or maybe a training provider. And so that all that information, that point of contact information, is personally identifiable. And being out of the federal government, we've got to be very careful about what kind of, as they call it, PII information we have on the website. So we took measures to make sure that we were getting consent to use all of that.
So let's take a topic like substance abuse.
Yeah.
Okay. So there is a program on substance abuse, and you've decided that you're going to include it in the top 150. And then who would review that? Would you send it out to social scientists to review, or would you do it in-house, or what's the process there?
So we would identify what we did was we identified main categories like that. So substance abuse would be a main category, and we would look for literature and program evaluations in that category. We would have a lead researcher assigned. This would be somebody that was under the employment of one of our contractors, the social science side contractor, and they would have a lead researcher who was a subject matter expert in that area. That lead researcher would help to identify the studies that we would review and then send those studies to two other experts in the field who would independently review and assess the quality of that research and the quality of the outcomes, and then provide ratings using the same standardized rating tool. So all of the researchers go through a training. They're all certified. They're all using the same rating tool. So it's not just expert judgment. It's an expert review, and it's systematic. And then if there's a dispute between those two initial researchers, then the third, the lead researcher, would help to resolve that dispute. Otherwise, those two reviews would, if they come back the same, then we would use that rating, and that would be that information would go up onto the website.
And I imagine the first day that the website was released, if there were obvious discrepancies, they'd be all over you. But apparently, it seemed to have a good response. People said, "Yeah, this is a fair evaluation of this program." No one complained. Or maybe we can talk about that in the last block of redress and feedback based on evaluations. That might be a good part, because I'm sure listeners are involved in situations where there's feedback as well. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, talk more about feedback and the whole development of the program. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio today, we have Phelan Weyrich, who's a PhD. He's a senior advisor to the Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Justice Programs at the DOJ.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Kids and concussions. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Children account for 90% of hospital emergency room visits for sports-related concussions. Analysts with HHS's Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, or ARC, found this in the agency's 2008 Emergency Department database. ARC's Claudia Steiner says people treated for concussions commonly had other injuries, generally less severe ones like pulled muscles, but sometimes more severe, such as skull fractures. About 12% experienced a moderate or prolonged loss of consciousness, and 21% experienced a brief loss. And Steiner says,
fortunately, only a small percentage of those treated for sports-related concussions in the emergency department had to be admitted to the hospital.
Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Schneider Electric has a proven 100-year-long record of supporting federal agencies to help you meet your responsibilities to mandates, missions, and taxpayers by combining the expertise of brands you know and trust, like Square D, APC, and Pelco, to make your energy safe, reliable, efficient, productive, and green. When it comes to power, process and machine, IT room, building, and security management, Schneider Electric's your energy expert and green partner for a sustainable and prosperous future. Visit Schneider-Electric.us.
The nation's largest intelligence event of the year returns to San Antonio, Texas, October 16th through the 19th. Network with professionals from the defense, intelligence, and homeland security communities at the GEOINT 2011 Symposium. USGIF's GEOINT Symposium features keynote speakers from agencies, combatant commands, and Congress, as well as panel sessions and breakout tracks tackling the critical issues affecting national security. Register now or learn more at GEOINT2011.com. That's GEOINT2011.com.
Cloud computing. Your data and apps must move easily and securely to reach many clouds, not just one. That's why the network that connects, protects, and lets your data move fearlessly through the clouds means more than ever. See how. Cloud Advantage for Government, the Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com, brought to you by Cisco and Intel.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies. and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Are you ready to explore how consolidation, cloud computing, and mobility are driving change in government? Plan now to attend GuideTech and Affirm September 15th symposium to learn how 15 agencies are reforming the way they do business. Together, they'll discuss how OMB's 25-point plan is being implemented with leaders at GAO, Veterans Affairs, the Army, DHS, the FBI, and Commerce, among others, as they deliver citizen services across a variety of devices seamlessly. Register today for this half-day symposium at Affirm.org.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Temin and Amy Morris on The Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Phelan Weyrich, who's a PhD. He is a senior advisor to the Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Justice Programs at the DOJ, talking about a website that was released back in June called crimesolutions.gov, kind of an innovative site where they evaluate 150 programs to find out what works, what doesn't work, and they provide this information for a wide range of people, including researchers, policymakers, maybe even some Congress folks. Now, this is a tech show, so I have a mandatory survey that all my guests have to do here in the last block to find out if you're really a nerd or not. And I don't know if you're going to score too high on this, Phelan, but we're gonna run it anyway. So here's the 10 questions that I normally ask. What's the year of your first computer?
I think the year I got my first computer was 1995.
95. Okay. The year of your first cell phone?
The year my wife got pregnant with my daughter, that would be 2001.
And the operating system on your machines at home?
Is
Windows, Unix, a Mac?
Right, I've got a Mac and a PC, so Windows.
It's moving up there. And type of connection, just a Fios or satellite?
It's a cable.
Okay, standard. And the type of mobile phone you have? Smartphones, feature phone?
Yeah, it's a smartphone.
Okay, and what's the flavor? Is it IBM?
It's an Android.
Android, okay. Number of apps on your Android?
I don't know, but I do know that for a while my phone was known only as the Angry Bird machine by my
so
children.
So now we have one.
Yeah.
Do you have a tablet device?
No, I've got a Nook. That's it, just
okay.
A reader.
Okay. And what social networking sites do you participate in?
I'm a delinquent user of Facebook.
Yeah, me too. The last book you read, was it electronic or was it paper?
You know, it was electronic, but I'm not responsible for borders going under.
Well, you didn't hit the nerdometer very high here, buddy. You're not really technically a nerd.
I'm a social scientist nerd, so I've got that part covered.
Yeah, that cover, you probably score real high on that test, huh?
I can look at charts and statistics all day.
And we'll talk about Emil Durkheim and all those origins of social science, huh? Yeah, I studied that crazy stuff back in the Civil War, I think it was so far ago. let's talk about the website, crimesolutions.gov. So let's just say that John Gilroy here is managing a program, ABC, and I go to crimesolutions.gov, and you give me a little red flag. And so I'm getting mad. I want to drive to Washington and grab you by the tie and say, okay, Phelan, what's going on here, buddy? Who paid you off? I mean, is there feedback allowed here? How does this work?
Right. So this is something, it has happened. It's happened essentially just once that we've had a program that really wanted to appeal the evidence rating that we gave on crimesolutions.gov. They felt that the quality of the evaluation evidence suggested that they should be rated higher. Through the process, we rated it as a no effects program. So we have a process for that, and we basically go back and we revisit all of our internal mechanics to make sure, first of all, that what's showing up on the website does in fact reflect the way we rated everything. And then we go back and review the review process itself. And we take a look at how did the expert reviewers rate these studies? What did they consider? Did they consider all the things they were supposed to? And especially this early in an effort like this, it's very important for us to take all those appeals very seriously and to go back and shake the trees In this case, we found that we ended up sticking by our guns, which was disappointing to the folks who were appealing it, but we provided them with a very direct response, and we gave them the reason for why it is we made the decisions we made.
One out of 150, not, you know, 1%. I mean, that's not a bad batting record, there isn't. I mean,
we feel pretty good about our record. I think we've reflected pretty accurately the type of programs we're trying to assess here. And again, this is information that's intended to inform decision making. I think that even if you didn't like the evidence rating we came up with, this information can help you in many different ways, because you can't find it all in one place in any other location. So we think that it's an extremely valuable site for folks, even if they're just working in a field, to go in and take a look at the programs in that area to educate themselves about the things that are showing results.
What about the future here? So your first chunk was 150 programs, which is probably reasonable. So where's the program headed in the next 2 or 3 years? What's going to look like in 3 or 4 years, Phelan?
Sure. And so the first point is sort of the obvious one. We haven't covered the universe yet. There's more program evaluations in this area that we want to make sure to include over time. And there's different kinds of social science research that we really want to access and do a better job of presenting. It's very important for us to have a high standard of quality, a high standard of transparency, and a high standard of usability. So we're continuing to develop and expand the ways that we present this, but where we want to be in the next few years is widely recognized as the source of information on this, and really getting a lot of usage and having a lot of utility for local decision makers and local practitioners who are going to be, you know, really the ones on the ground benefiting from this.
And I'm sure the local decision makers are getting their arms twisted saying, okay, we're going to spend $500,000 on this program. Is it working? Let's justify it. Let's prove that it's worthwhile. And finally, they can go back and they can use evidence rather than just emotion or anecdotal information on defending the expenditure of something like law enforcement or crime prevention.
Yeah, and a lot of people, when they think of this kind of work, they point to the tough economic times that we're in. And that's very true. But honestly, in my opinion, it's really never a bad time to make a good decision. And so that's what we're trying to help. We're never going to find ourselves saying, well, you know, we're so flush with money that it doesn't matter whether we're using this kind of knowledge or not. This is a tool in the toolbox. If public service and justice professionals were in the business world, they'd be looking for any edge they could get to be more competitive, more effective, more efficient. That's exactly the kind of information we're providing.
And I think the lesson learned for people in other agencies is just that, is if your budget's being reduced, or if you are tasked with the job of helping people use funds more efficiently, there has to be evidence-based programs to use rather than just emotional anecdotal programs, and that can justify expenditures from state and local to the federal agencies as well.
And it's also a way that we at the federal level can use our resources, which are also getting tighter, to best support and help the localities and the states, because, you know, just providing grant dollars is very helpful and we'll continue to do that, but also really trying to make the best use of those dollars and provide information that allows people to make the best use of those dollars is just as important.
We've spent the last hour talking with Phelan Weyrich about crimesolutions.gov. You can go to that site and take a look at the graphics there and maybe apply those lessons to your own site when you're trying to come up with something that shares information, that collaborates in a secure fashion, which was achieved very well with crimesolutions.gov. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Phelan Weyrich, Ph.D. He's a senior advisor to the Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Justice Programs at the U.S. Department of Justice. Thanks, Phelan.
Thanks, John.
Been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
From fiddle and foresters to dolphin trainers, federal employees have some pretty cool jobs. Check out our Cool Jobs in Government series at federalnewsradio.com, search term cool jobs.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. Our top story is breaking news. Libyan rebels say they have captured